Well, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Thanks very much for attending our session today on planes, trains and ships. My name is Brett Baker. I work with the Allco Finance Group and I'm part of the distribution team. I have my colleagues here with me today, David Skelton and Dominic Corrigan as well. What we're going to do today, I'll be introducing our speaker, Nicholas Gove, and then after that we'll have a Q&A session for about 10 minutes after his presentation, and then we'll sort of wrap up. Before we get into the presentation proper, I thought I might just go through a few, if you like, through a few interesting points that not many people are aware of about the Allco Finance Group and our activities that we get up to. We are one of three major players in the operating leasing market in Australia, the others being Macquarie Bank and Babcock & Brown. Both the aircraft and shipping markets globally are experiencing unprecedented growth, providing companies such as ourselves with greater opportunities to access the operating lease market. We have a very diversified leasing portfolio made up of shipping, rail and aircraft assets and some small ticket items as well. AFG has been in the operating lease market since 1981, whereas our competitors have only just recently got into it in the last couple of years in Macquarie's case and in Babcock & Brown since the early 90s. The market is incredibly liquid. For example, we actually had a couple of aircraft leased to Ansett on the 12th of September when they went down in 2001. Within a week of them going under, we actually had those planes re-leased to another airline and they were back in the air flying within 7 days. So it's a very deep and very liquid market. And finally, at Allco, we don't just employ financial engineers, and I'm not going to put myself in that category, but we do have some very smart people there, one of which I'm about to introduce. But we also employ people on the ground that keep the ships sailing and the planes in the air flying. So without any further ado, I'll introduce Nicholas. Nicholas joined Allco as a Director of Structured Finance in 2001 and is now Managing Director of Corporate Finance and Equity Capital Markets. Whilst with Allco, Nicholas has been responsible for structured finance transactions in Allco's core asset classes, including aviation, shipping and rail, and the creation of private and listed funds managed by Allco. Prior to joining Allco, Nicholas was in charge of project and acquisition finance for Transfield Holdings, and prior to this held positions with the NAB in structured finance and PricewaterhouseCoopers in corporate finance. Nicholas is also a director of Strategic Investments Group Limited, which is a listed company in New Zealand, and he is also an avid surfer. So if you'd like to make him welcome, please. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for that introduction, Brett. Allco is—I was very impressed by the introduction. Actually, couple of typos on this slide, though. I think Allco had a market capitalization of $4 billion. That share price graph is probably upside down, based on the last couple of weeks. But going to the title of the presentation, it's probably the second best kept secret. I think we'll be marketing a short equities fund pretty soon. So just coming back to a couple of the key points on Allco Finance Group, we have been in shipping, aviation and rail for a long time, since 1979, and over that time we've built up a deep and thorough understanding of the assets and the asset classes. What we want to do is introduce to you some of the quantitative data that we've been able to generate based on our knowledge and experience of the sector. Traditionally, people invest in lease assets based on far more qualitative measures. It's a good investment. Lease pools are lowish risk. What we've really tried to do in the last 6 to 12 months is put together some investment products which have a sufficient level of due diligence to take to the institutional investor markets. And I think probably a good analogy would be what's happened in the last 10 to 15 years in the property sector, where property is the largest lease asset class. In the market, you're all invested in direct and listed property in some way or other. And really the property phenomenon came from corporates outsourcing their property rental needs through through sale and leaseback transactions. And ultimately, most corporates these days don't own their corporate headquarters. And in a sense, what shipping, rail and aviation leasing does is similar. It's outsourced the ownership of the assets to a third party, and the underlying income stream and rent stream from those assets, we believe, generates sound investment opportunities. Just a little bit more about Alco. We have over 440 staff. We have a global infrastructure or network which enables us to service what are essentially global assets. Obviously, planes and ships fly all over the world, and rolling stock is quite a regional asset, but I'll get into some of the more detail about that in a minute. Introduction to lease finance. What is leasing finance? A lease is essentially an agreement to convey the use of an asset for a specific period of time for rental compensation. I suppose embedded in that sentence are the two main reasons we think it's a good investment asset. Firstly, you have an asset. For a start, you have a hard asset, a physical asset that's worth something. And secondly, you are renting the use of that asset to a third party, so you're receiving a cash flow, a locked-in cash flow for a period of time. Now, obviously, what you have is the fundamentals of an asset with a residual value, something you can sell that has a level of liquidity, and you have an income stream. So the quantitative analysis that we've done is looking at the risk and return from the asset and the income stream associated with the asset. Leasing is a major source of financing in capital-intensive industries such as transportation. Leasing, once again, to come back to the property analogy, corporates worked out very quickly that the cost of capital associated with property was lower than the cost of capital for their underlying operations. It's not a dissimilar issue that that most of our customers have that lease assets from us. Essentially, the cost of capital for an ALCO-based fund which leases aircraft to Qantas or leases ships to a global transportation listing and global transportation and logistics company, their cost of capital is higher than ours, and they get a benefit through structurally separating the ownership of the assets from the ownership of the capital that runs their operations. Traditionally, we split leases into operating and finance leases. Operating leases are what we're interested in. They are where a lessor, such as ourselves, owns the asset and has the right or receives the asset back at the end of the lease term. Under a finance lease, the end user of the asset retains ownership of the asset at the end of the lease term. So in operating lease, essentially you're transferring the ownership or the risk of the asset at the end of the lease term. Really the true residual value risk of that asset rests with us or the lessor. Operating leases usually have a number of characteristics that differentiate them from finance leases. They are often shorter and more flexible in lease term. Finance leases are more of a financing arrangement which is akin to a borrow and buy decision by the corporate. The lessor retains exposure to the residual value of the asset in an operating lease, and generally the assets are off balance sheet for the lessee in an operating lease. The advantages, obviously there are a number of advantages in operating leases, otherwise no one would do it. Residual value risk. Firstly, the lessees can focus on their core business rather than managing the underlying assets. It's a very common theme with our customers that they get to focus on their core operations, which is moving freight, moving people, moving sea freight. And I suppose a recent example of this would be the growth of low-cost carriers in the aviation sector, where you see a lot of newer airlines, the Virgin Blues, the Jetstars, where not owning the asset allows them to focus on what their core function is, which is moving people. And a number of the risks associated with the asset ownership we focus on as a lessor. Second advantage is flexibility. The end user can take advantage of temporary demand fluctuations. Once again, I'll use an aviation analogy. where airlines do go broke, but if you hold the assets at the end of the day, you continue to make money. And the first person that a receiver pays when they step into an airline in Chapter 11 in the US is the operating lessor. So they pay us because they need the assets to keep the business functioning. That also highlights the low risk nature of the underlying assets. The lease payment comes out as an operating cash flow of the business. Logistics and transport businesses are riskier than ownership of the underlying assets. So when you often hear anecdotally a lot of fund managers will stay out of airlines. You hear about people not wanting to invest in airlines in the US, for example. That may be true, but it does not infect the underlying value and returns out of the assets. The next advantage is obsolescence risk. Assets do have technological obsolescence, and what we have found over time is that very often the end users of the assets actually make poor investment decisions. We're different as an operating lessor. We gain our return over the whole of life return from the ownership of an asset. What we've found in operating companies over the years is you have a number of reasons that they may make poor asset decisions. The best example would be a mining company that buy gold-plated equipment. I'm sure you've all heard about examples such as that or in the public service where a government-owned instrumentality may actually buy something that's overspecified for the work they're doing. What we're focused on is rather different as a lessor. We focus on buying and owning assets that we understand will generate an optimal return and will hold their value over a long period of time. That, I think, also highlights one of the real benefits of being a lessor in what can be volatile markets, and that is that we are never we're a financial buyer. When the SARS outbreak happened, we weren't selling aircraft. We were buying aircraft because spot values for aircraft fell by up to 40% at that point in time. You must understand the asset classes and you must manage them well, and you do need that technical understanding to access this particular investment class. The final point, capital efficiency. Operating leases provide 100% off balance sheet finance, and yes, that is one of the main drivers in companies outsourcing the ownership of their assets. Investors traditionally have had limited information on accessing this investment class, so what we'll get to now in the presentation are some of the more quantitative measures of the performance of the asset class. Just a quick overview of the market, what the markets look like. And in each case, this is the market for the assets, not the market for the operators that use the assets. We estimate around 400 billion US of aircraft. So there are about 17,000 passenger and freight aircraft flying in our skies at the moment. And that's forecast to grow to about 35,000 over the next 20 years, a big capital demand. Many billions of dollars per annum is invested in aircraft. A single new 747 costs 200 to 250 million US, depending on how it's specified. A pretty big market. We have Alco's own portfolio is a few billion, so we're a relatively small player, but we're certainly focused and on risk management and asset selection within that market. Typically, aircraft last for 25 years. They'll do two or three lease cycles of maybe 6 to 8 years in larger commercial airlines. Then very often the assets are reconfigured for the freight market. Drivers, in each of the asset classes, there's a key underlying demand driver for the assets. Obviously, in aviation, it's route passenger kilometres or route passenger miles. which is the demand for global air transport. It's strongly linked to global GDP. The leasing market, around 30% of the total aviation ownership market is in the operating lease space, with ILFC and GECAS accounting for 50% of the market. They actually own between them about 5,000 of the 17,000 commercial aircraft. Two dominant players, but then a lot of smaller and niche-focused operating lessors in the sector. The leases are generally to commercial airlines and air freight companies. Shipping, once again, around $500 billion of assets. Generally greater transparency in the shipping market than aviation. There is a very, very good level of market information on current lease rates, on trading values, sale values of ships. Very good database, very good information, very well tracked, and the databases have been kept in place for a long time. The of those 500 billion aircraft, there are a number of major vessel types: tankers, dry bulk carriers, and container ships. There are a few others: row-row, roll-on, roll-off, car carriers, and other quite specific vessels. Probably one difference with from the aviation sector and shipping is that in aviation you only have really two major suppliers, Boeing and Airbus, to a lesser extent Bombardier. But in shipping you have a lot of design differences between shipyards, so you need, once again, you need to have a very, very good assessment capability of the assets, and you do have to have a deep embedded knowledge and understanding of engineering and an understanding of vessels and your client demands. So in aviation, you have fewer asset types and, in a sense, a more homogenous underlying asset, a 737 to 737. The key demand drivers, world GDP growth, world trade, and obviously what we've been seeing with China and India is massive growth in demand. Shipping has been quite volatile. The prices of ships are, we certainly believe at the moment the prices of ships are above fair value, but it moves quite can move quite quickly. Right now, we are not buying a lot of ships. We've actually been selling some ships in the last few months, but the market's certainly the market's off its highs of the last 6 months. The leasing market's highly segmented, large number of privately owned niche providers. Many of the ship lessors were family owned companies, Greek shipping companies, Asian shipping companies that owned their vessels. And what's happened over time, over the last 5 years or so, there's been a gradual shift to more institutional players, operating lease companies like Alco being heavily involved in that market. So it's the market's changing, and the market's changing permanently. Lease terms are shorter in the shipping sector. That contributes to the volatility that we have seen shipping, and you'll see this volatility translate into the volatility numbers that we're going to produce for you. Rail. Rail is a market that is quite regionally focused. Rolling stock doesn't tend to move from the US to Europe and Australia and Asia. It stays. Rolling stock stays on the track where it's built, basically. And that actually underpins the very low-risk nature of rolling stock. We believe 200 to 300 billion of assets, that's probably OECD-based assets, very regional markets, and once again, you have to have a presence in the market to understand the true risk of the underlying assets. And in many ways, ALCO's built its business to have capacity in the key markets where the assets are. The assets typically have much longer useful lives. I would say in rail, you tend to have the classic grandfather's axe, where you replace the handle and you replace the blade, but it's still the same asset, I suppose. In rail, over a 30 or 40 year life, you replace the bogie and the wheels and the undercarriage four or five times. But the asset itself will hold a residual value for a very, very long time. And to give you an example, there are assets in Australia. There are rail wagons which are 70 years old still running on the networks. And the assets actually hold their income earning ability for a very long time. In the US, a 30-year-old wheat wagon, 20 to 30-year-old wheat wagon, will probably earn a rental return that will be 30% below a brand new wheat wagon. So you can see that that asset over a 20 to 30-year period can potentially generate a very long-term and stable income stream. Key drivers in the market, once again, it's transport. But a little bit of difference with rail. There is some competition with road, but once you get over 500 kilometres of freight distance, rail is by far more competitive than road. And what we are seeing in the rail markets in the US and what we're seeing in Europe is a move towards the model they have in the US. Europe traditionally has had a lot of road freight and very little rail, and it's because Europe is a federation of countries which don't have consistent standards through the countries. But we're seeing that change with common standards and which are being introduced actually in 2008 in Europe. The leasing market, also very mature. 50% or more of the assets are provided by lessors in the market in the US. Lease terms typically 3 to 6 years. And probably the other risk mitigant in rail is that the lessees are generally a high credit quality. So many of the railroads in the US and Australia are investment grade rated. Performance, the interesting stuff. The research indicates that operating leases generate solid absolute returns with a high cash component and low correlation to traditional asset classes. I suppose the reason we started this exercise was really we were looking to introduce institutional investors to these lease assets. And we've seen, I suppose, the growth in direct alternative assets through the infrastructure sector, particularly the pioneering that one of our Aussie investment banks done in Macquarie Bank has been fantastic. And what we wanted to do was really look at the data and determine whether or not we did have validity and we could actually prove that aviation, shipping, rail and lease assets were a good and valid asset class. And we've all seen the quantitative information infrastructure, which I think we'd call patchy. It's built off correlations and returns are built off the Macquarie Global Infrastructure Index is an example. What we've been able to do is actually track back for the last 25 years the average prices of different types of aircraft, and we've been able to build a value-weighted basket of global aircraft. And in a sense, what we've done is build accumulation indices which have returns and underlying asset values for a basket of aircraft, a basket of freight-carrying ships, and a basket of rolling stock. And in each case, we've sought to valuate them. We have done the study both on an index basis, so we've looked at listed leasing companies or listed asset-rich companies as a proxy, and I haven't presented that data here, but it's certainly available. Here we've taken the underlying investments in the assets, and what we have, I suppose, there's quite a difference between aviation, shipping and rail, and just to talk through the aviation numbers, you'll see firstly, on an ungeared basis, what that equates to, so if we look in the aviation column, the 8.3% ungeared return, that is the return of holding an aircraft, an average aircraft, ungeared over the last 20 years and the associated volatility. And the asset volatility comes from quarterly valuations that we've taken from a number of global databases, and the information is actually very solid in the aviation sector. You'll see actually surprisingly low volatility. It really surprised me to see 3.3%, because that's not what intuitively you think of planes falling out of the sky. You don't think of of them as being a low volatility. And you think of airlines going bust. You don't actually think of associate low volatility with aviation. Now, what happens in aviation, and the people that own aircraft and the banks that invest debt pieces in aircraft, they know this. They know it anecdotally, and they know it qualitatively rather than quantitatively. What we've then done, if you look at the third and fourth rows in the aviation column, you'll see we talk about geared returns and geared volatility. What we do to gear the assets is we assume an optimal pool of aircraft, which we gear to what I would call conservative industry standards. In aviation, it's probably something like 70% gearing, 70% debt to equity or debt to total capital, and that would that then raises, obviously increases the return and the geared volatility. That at that level of debt, though, you're talking about issuing paper that is investment grade equivalent. So we're not over-gearing it. We're not putting layers of mezz in and over-engineering the structures. We're really putting what you'd say are optimal levels of gearing for their respective asset class. You'll see we've done that for each of the three asset classes, and you'll see very, very strong returns in the shipping sector, but also a great deal of volatility. And in the rail sector, you'll see good returns and a lower level of volatility. We've also reproduced their correlations because we obviously have a data set of returns and underlying asset values, which enables us to do correlations with some of the non-alternative asset classes. And by way of example, if you look at aviation's volatility against Australian shares, we have a zero volatility. We do not find... Yep. Yeah. Shipping is 60 to 65%. Rail can certainly go up towards 80%. It generally depends on the age of the assets, though. As you get closer to or further through the life of the asset, the life of the average age of the asset pool, gearing tends to drop. So, but for new assets, you'll have higher gearing. For average, in each case, we're really talking about average life assets. Yep. It's the geared version. Debt to total capital. Sorry, those are the ungeared correlations. Sorry, they're the geared correlations. Ungeared. Gearing won't affect the aviation to Aussie shares correlation of zero, so that threw me in. Performance risks. Probably worthwhile just talking about some of the risk management techniques that go on a daily basis in managing a portfolio of these assets. Firstly, the key risk, obviously, they're pretty simple assets. You own something and you receive an income stream for it. There is obviously maintenance and upkeep and so on, but really the risks fall into income risk and residual asset risk. Residual value risk, the risk that the asset is worth less than the assumed pricing at the end of a lease. And there are obviously many, many management techniques involved in assessing residual value risk, but you ensure the assets are modern, they're well maintained, and they have a wide user base. Wide user base is very important. If you have assets that only have one end user, you can introduce a lot of liquidity risk or volatility into that particular asset. Obviously, diversifying the asset types and the maturity profile as well of the leases. The reason you diversify the maturity profile is you don't want to risk having all of your aircraft assets come off lease on September the 12th. It's an obvious reason why you'd do that. You obviously use conservative pricing assumptions in building up the assets. Releasing risk, which is really related to the income risk of the assets. It refers to the ability of the lessor to release the asset under a range of circumstances and market conditions. And really the re-leasing risk, I suppose, is tied hand in hand with the residual value risk. You pick assets that have a wider user base, you deal with lessees that are more likely to extend the lease term. There are many techniques in ensuring that the income stream of the asset is stronger for longer. The third risk, credit risk, which is associated with the income risk of the assets. Credit risk deals with potential for the lessor to lose income due to a default by the lessee. Managed by leasing to operators with a high credit rating, ensuring assets are highly marketable. This particular risk is the risk that actually gets best managed by most people. Every bank should be good and should have a core competency in performing good credit risk. We perform good credit risk, but what a lot of banks, investment banks, and some managers don't do well is the underlying residual value risk. And so we think the two need to go hand in hand to generate strong long-term returns from the assets. Okay, a bit of rudimentary portfolio CAPM here. Research suggests that an allocation to operating leases improves the risk and return profile of a balanced portfolio. So we have just taken some fairly simple assumptions on a balanced portfolio in Portfolio 1 and an allocation in Portfolio 2. And we have then attributed a 5% weighting to an industry basket of planes, trains and ships. You'll see for most portfolios a 15% allocation to direct alternates in a new asset class would obviously be quite extreme. But we then, due to the low correlations, we've overlaid that and we're just demonstrating our portfolio moving to a more optimal position, closer to an above the efficient frontier. And you'll see we then gear it. So there is a capacity to look at both geared and ungeared returns. And on a geared basis, we certainly believe there is a capacity to further enhance the return or the position on an efficient frontier. Pardon? It is. The research, what we had to actually do, it is actually all based on third-party databases. So in aviation, for example, we used a couple of databases, Air Claims and Ascend, which are databases kept by some of the major aviation insurers. And they had data on values and average rental rates going back for a long period of time. You then do need to overlay some assumptions. The data is, it's not ideal. It's not perfect information. It's not pulling data from Bloomberg, because you don't have perfectly homogenous assets. So if you're talking about BHP shares, one BHP share is exactly the same as the next. But if you're dealing with 737s, you have differences in value based on the age of the asset, based on which counterparties used it, a whole host of subjective factors. But I think what we're trying to highlight is that there is quantitative information for direct assets, and in this particular asset class, that quantitative information is good-ish. It's certainly better, we believe, than you would get in dealing in the infrastructure sector or indeed direct property. I mean, most of the quantitative information from direct property is really built from listed property funds and property indexes. So we think that the direct information that we've been able to gain is a good indicator that the risk is, that the correlation is low and that the assets can form a valid part of a portfolio. Okay, to summarise what we've been through. Operating leases are a key source of finance already. There are very deep, active and global markets. You guys are already invested in operating leases because you're taking property positions. They're a growing share of a growing market. Certainly in aviation, shipping and rail, we have experienced strong growth and we will continue to experience strong growth because of the outsourcing trend that's occurred in corporates and continues to occur. Traditionally, these assets have been difficult for investors to access, and we certainly would not encourage you to go out and buy a plane. We would encourage you to find good managers to access aircraft and be comfortable with their risk management techniques, understand the asset class, understand the risks, and understand whether or not it fits your investors' needs and fits within your portfolios. And I think probably the thing that will be a little bit different from this presentation is that the research that we've done, and certainly we think the research is a good indicator of solid absolute returns. Low volatility, I would put a proviso on the low volatility. There is some embedded manager alpha that goes into managing a portfolio and taking portfolio selection decisions. It's not, if you look at the pure volatility of a single, of holding a single aircraft or a single piece of rolling stock, it's going to be quite high. But if you look at a manager that manages a portfolio of those assets and does it well, you certainly have the capability to have, well, you're blending some manager, I suppose, manager volatility with the underlying asset volatility. Another key point is the level of cash that gets generated. We've all heard the concerns about infrastructure assets and how so much of the value can be locked into cash returns that are at the back end, that are all CPI based, and the high gearing that gets loaded into them. We have very high cash returns out of our asset classes, and the reason we have higher cash returns is because the asset depreciates. So if you have a ship that generates, if you have a ship that generates a 20% internal rate of return over its life, you're going to get cash back, which equates to the depreciation of the ship as well as the 20% return. So your cash return out of that ship might be 25% cash return per annum. That's just one example. It does depend on the age of the asset, though, as well. And finally, a low correlation to traditional asset classes. The low correlation, we believe, is also evidenced by the work we've done on listed indices, where we've looked at, where we've created indices of companies that are asset-rich in these specific sectors. And overall, we think the qualities make operating leases an attractive proposition. Thank you.
Thanks very much.